This is That Other Sports Show. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, anywhere you are on the planet, in the atmosphere, in the universe, thank you for taking a moment of your busy day to listen to us bullshit. Jesse is with me as always. Say what's up, Jess.
What's up, people? Nice to have you back. Nice to be back.
I am dead in the middle of a tangent, and I said, Jesse, let me pause and let me come back to jump right to this tangent that has nothing to do with sports, but that's kind of how we do it. We have plenty of fights to recap. We'll recap UFC 291, the main card. We'll definitely recap Spence versus Crawford. I'm merging names already. We may talk some football at the end. It depends on how much time we got left. But I was saying this right before we hit the record button. So I have ants coming into my fucking house, and it is annoying. I have sprayed the exterior of my house with like the Home Depot level bug sprays that you can buy. And this shit is so toxic that I'm breathing it in. I'm not wearing a mask because I'm an idiot. I'm breathing it in and I'm coughing. I'm going into insane coughing fits. So now I feel like my whole oxygen levels are off, even though I did this 2 hours ago. So if it sounds like I'm taking deeper breaths than usual, I swear it's not the smoking that I was doing over the weekend. It has everything to do with me just inhaling bug pesticides. And here is why I'm inhaling bug pesticides, Jesse. Because in California, I don't know how they do it where you're at. If you want to fucking hire a bug guy, you don't just hire him one time and he comes out and he sprays your shit and you hand him $100 and that's it. No, it's 2-year contracts where they get you with an upfront fee and then they come out like every 2 or 3 months. And when it's all said and done, it's like $150 down, $50 a month. So that's $200 right there. And then we're doing 12 months. So that's another, what, fucking 51? It's like $600. Dude, I am not paying fucking $700 or $800 for a motherfucker to spray my house. I'm just not. I'm sorry, Jess. Do you have the same issues in your community? Not ants, the bug spray, the price of the bug sprayers.
We do. At a previous house that I had, we kind of lived like there's a little creek that ran behind us. We had a lot of bugs and stuff. And so we would get an infestation of ants and stuff. Spiders and so on, and I can't stand spiders. For all of you listeners, I hate spiders. Like I Hulk smash spiders. I don't care how small they are. I'll put a hole in my wall to make sure that thing's dead. So I really don't care. Like as long as it's splattered into oblivion, I feel so much better. And we do have those companies where, you know, you pay an upfront cost and it's like they'll do like every couple months they'll come out and spray and then they'll do some other stuff and then you keep getting bills from there on and they are contracted. But we do have like independent bug spray guys.
I can't find this fucking guy.
I've been looking. We have them. They're Dude. Hard to find. And generally they're like some old farm guy.
Yes.
Who I don't feel comfortable to let around my children, let alone come into my house and spray my house. So it's either pick the old dirty looking man to come out and spray my house, therefore know where I live and, you know, all the rooms in my house and so on and so forth.
There are some possible repercussions that are rather large.
So we went with the contractual people and had them come out. They come out in their professional uniforms and they spray with their professional spray guns, but it just costs a whole lot more.
Was it around $600 for the year?
Or was I would it have more? To say, yeah, it was about that. I think a little bit less. Not $600. Probably more like $450.
If I had fucking roaches, I could see. If I had bed bugs, if I had rats, if I had shit like that, okay, dude, like, come and take my money. But I just got a little bit of fucking ants running up in my shit. every once in a while, in the nighttime, you get a water, what do you call those, water bugs? Those, like, really, really big black-looking roaches.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking, we live in the country, dude. It happens. It's okay. Like, it's just, it comes with the territory. But you motherfuckers. So, the last house I lived in, I was renting. I was able to, and this was years ago, I was able to find one of these motherfuckers on the internet, possible chomo. I don't know what he had cooking. But I was able to shake him down and basically say, listen, I'm not signing any fucking contracts. I'm going to give you $150 cold hard cash. Spray my outside. Spray my inside. You want to hit me up in 6 months? That's cool. See if I care. But you're not getting any fucking credit cards from me. And I'm not signing any contracts. Get out of here. So this is where I'm at, listeners. If you're listening right now, please let us know your thoughts at TeamToss21 on Twitter, at Valdez spelled backwards, followed by 559, at JTT81, the easiest one of all of them. That is Twitter. We never touched Threads. I brought it up to Jesse. It was a thought. It never occurred. We don't do Instagram. We don't do TikTok. If you want to follow the show, please follow it. Team Toss 21, Jess. I'm sorry.
Now, see, I was just about to say we only do X.
Oh, that's Twitter.
But see, listen, when I say we only do X, it makes me sound like we're just in here doing ecstasy. Like,
no, I like that.
While we do the podcast. Is that a cool thing? Can we say, hey, we do X?
Nah, dude, I think you're onto something. I think you're really onto something, keen here. And
makes it edgy, kind of cool.
Listen, yeah. you want to find us. You want to see where this show is at. Well, we only do X. So let's start there.
We only do X.
That's it. Sorry. Anything else? We're not doing it. We only do X. So, Jess, yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm a little frustrated because I've been inhaling fucking chemicals all day, spraying the outside of my house, praying that ants don't come into my pantry, and I have to pull everything out of my pantry. And now I'm throwing away Nutella. Now I'm throwing away like a box of pasta that I didn't finish because I don't make a whole box of family pasta. It's just wasted food that could have been used at a later date. It's bullshit. I'm telling you. Okay, Jess, I'm coming down off of this now. I'm cooling off a little bit. Thank you for letting me expound. Thank you for letting me get that off of my chest. Jess, let's talk some fights. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start at Spence?
I want to start with two from the UFC 291 card. I want to start there because Crawford Spence, I want to let you have your moments because I know that you're going to have them. And so I want to quickly or semi-quickly get through UFC 291, but I want to start off with these two individuals, not necessarily the fight because the fights were exciting in both finishes, but just the individuals. First, did you get the chance on the prelim card to watch Roman Kopylov?
So this is the fight that ended in the high kick, right?
The high kick knockout.
And so give me the guy's name again. Roman?
Roman Kopylov.
So I believe
he's Russian. Yes. And if you've seen highlights or anything, please.
He's trained with, I believe they're called the Russian Hands Team, which gives you a little bit of background on why his stand-up is so good. What I know about this dude is what I caught on the tail end post game show from Anik, and Anik said this guy had went through some stuff with training, and I don't know if he was doing military stuff, but I think he took a little bit of a sabbatical. Again, I could be wrong. This is all playing a telephone game here. You know how we do it on this show. But I believe that he had a little bit of some time off training or wasn't fighting and then has come back and now he's just reeling off knockouts. I think they said he has two or three knockout wins in a row. So when you're knocking guys out like that in that impressive of a fashion, it's hard to miss you.
This kid's hands are – I mean, you and I watch – you know, you are a big boxing guy to fit alongside your combat sports, your mixed martial arts. When I watched him fight, I watched his fight, and his hands are so crisp. And I mean, like, this kid fight ever before in my life. And so I've heard of Claudio Ribeiro. I know that he's got some stand-up. He's a pretty big, thick guy, kind of built a little bit like a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I know that he's got some good strikes and everything as well. Plus, obviously, he's Brazilian, so he's got a little bit of Brazilian jiu-jitsu background as well. Kapalov's hands are phenomenal. And I have no real clue about phenomenal hands. I mean, I've seen a lot of great in the past that have really good hands. His striking technique is so just unreal and clean and accurate. And the head kick was it was like a fake. He was going to the body. I believe he was going to the body. He fainted with his hands to the body. Ribeiro dropped his hands, and then he threw just this massive leg kick that just out of the face. And then he finished him off. I believe that he was basically out, but then once he hit the ground, Kapalov hit him with like a couple straights down.
I think there was one that was really nasty.
Yeah, like one was a vicious. Yeah, one was just a straight vicious, like tried to punch his head through the mat. This kid, from what I've seen in one fight, looks like he could be a problem in the middleweight division.
Jess, we did this with Fiziev about 2 years ago, where we went, this guy, his hands, they're different, and we got to keep an eye on this guy. And I think this is where we're landing with Roman, is the exact same thing. This kid, we got to keep an eye on this guy. And I've said it once, I'll come back and regurgitate it. I think when you're getting the highlight knockouts, the Sports Center knockouts, if you will, you're going to find your way either main eventing an Apex card, co-maining an Apex card, or ending up on a pay-per-view curtain jerking, because that's kind of where everybody starts. But
His post-interview, I can't remember if it was Anik or maybe, I think maybe it was Bisping. One of them asked him, like, you know, you won this highlight knockout reel. He goes, I know that you're not like in the top 10 or whatever, but like, who do you want, you know, who do you want to face next? And he said, Sean Strickland. Wow. It was just so funny because like it was almost like Kapalov has no idea, oblivious to the ratings. And he was like, oh, I want to fight Sean Strickland, you know? Yeah. And then Bisping's like, well, he's actually got like a title fight coming up. So
he's actually 20 pegs ahead of you, but go ahead.
It was hilarious how he's just like, nah, I want to fight Sean Strickland. Let's go. Kapalov to me looks like he's going to be a problem. Second individual on the prelim card. And you and I, when we talked about this fight, we had no idea who this kid was. We just knew he was undefeated. And so I think we completely blew off his fight. So I watched Gabriel Bonfim, whatever. His jiu-jitsu is straight up like insane jiu-jitsu. So I'm talking Kapalov's got the hands. Bonfim has just incredible jiu-jitsu.
This is going to be like MMA on the reg had Aaron Pico, where he's like, this is my guy. This is the future. This is the guy.
Bonfim is an incredible. Now, he didn't really strike a whole lot, and Evan Giles was the opponent, and Giles is definitely a striker. So I feel like it was kind of one of those fights meant for Bonfim to win. And Bonfim did everything that you're supposed to do when you're piled up against an opponent who is a striker, stand-up guy, and you're a ground specialist. You take him to the ground. What ended up happening was Giles tried to take him down, and Bonfim kind of rolled with it, and then ended up getting a slick submission win. And now in his young career, but this another kid to just kind of keep an eye on. He's a welterweight, so interesting matchups for both these guys, different divisions. But you know, we talk about it a lot on this show. Dana White's got to look for these stars, these potential superstars to promote and kind of bring up. Two names.
It's so interesting to me because the UFC, the grinder, the meat grinder that the UFC is, has, and we talk about it all the time, it's struggled at promoting stars and superstars. But there is a slew of young talent here, a lot of guys that are under 22, under 23, that have incredible records, whether they're undefeated with a dozen wins or they're 13-1 or 14-2. There's a lot of young wolves out there with impressive records. Now what will happen is the UFC meat grinder will churn them out. They'll lose a fight here. They'll fight injured when they shouldn't there and lose decisions. They'll have bad decisions. It's just kind of how it works. But we're going to talk about a fighter now. We're going to talk about probably two fighters here if we're going to keep it real that we pretty much stuck forks in, and now they seem they're in a different stratosphere. I believe we're going to start with one. Was the curtain jerker Kevin Holland?
Kevin Holland.
Was he the curtain jerker? I'm trying to remember the first fight.
I can't remember. I didn't post or pre-fight, so I just watched the fight.
Yeah, so Holland Chisia. Chisia? How do we say Michael Chisia's name?
I think it's Chisia.
Chisia. I believe, did we both pick Holland in this fight? Or did we both pick Chisia?
We both had Holland in this fight.
You know, it's so interesting how 2-3 years ago we were watching Holland just get fucking ragdolled by wrestlers and grinded out by guys that maybe weren't even great wrestlers, just better wrestlers than him. And he took a lot of losses. And he had that win a fight, lose two. Win a fight, lose the fight. Win two fights. He had this really weird streak that happens when you're fighting the highest level of competition in the UFC. And maybe some of those fights, he was completely outmatched. And we were saying that going into the fights. Yeah, he's probably outmatched in this fucking fight, but let's see what happens. This was a fight, and maybe it's because Michael was the perfect opponent, where it looked like he put everything together. And he just looked really fucking good. We know his stand-up is great. And we know he's going to have those initial bursts when he comes to wrestling. But, you know, the knock on Holland is always going to be, where's the gas tank? And can he continue to get up when he's taken down 7, 8, 10 minutes into a fight after 4, 5, 6, 7 attempts? The repetitiveness of it, if you will. He defended takedowns. He defended a takedown, spun Michael around and took cage control, hurt Michael with a knee or with some strikes, and then finished with the anaconda choke, which I'm going to go back to calling it the Nogueira anaconda choke, because it's gotten too many different names now, and I feel like the UFC is trying to get the Nogueira choke, the anaconda choke. They're trying to get the name out of there, and they're trying to change the name, so I'm going to bring it back. Give me some thoughts on this fight, Jess.
Yeah, I mean, I want to give, it was an incredible performance. He has had that, you know, as you said, that up and down career where he won one, lost two, won two, lost one kind of situation. Was never really able to bust into the top five. I think he hung around the top 10 for a minute and then, you know, took one of those L's and then dropped back down. I wanted incredible performance, but my issue is he fought a guy who hasn't fought, and I don't believe Chisea has fought in like 2 years.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. He had back issues. He lots of injuries.
Yeah, sicknesses.
They talked a lot about this before the fight. Basically, he had some back issues. They wanted him to have surgery. He never got the surgery. He got like 6 epidurals or some shit like that, and this was his first true fight back from all of that.
So, I mean, and Michael Chisea also, I believe he was an Ultimate Fighter guy, and he's been around the block a time or two. So, in age-wise, definitely, you know, as far as athletes are concerned, a little longer in the tooth. And he's had a extensive career. He's fought in some really good opponents in his time as well. Taking that layoff, he's fighting a guy like Kevin Hall, who properly is trained. And obviously, he's gotten a little bit better with his wrestling defense and even his wrestling a little bit. I just don't know if that was the right move to make for Chisea. But then again, they're both probably in that same like 2019, you know, range, maybe even lower. But again, all that aside, Kevin Holland looked fantastic. It'll be interesting to see who he ends up. I don't ever see him challenging in the welterweight division, competing for a title, but he can definitely be in a lot of exciting fights.
Really unique spot in his career, because I don't know how much difficulty he has making 170, and even says, I quote, I like to eat steaks and have sex. So, and as a man, I feel that. And I'm not trying to make 170. So I've definitely felt that. I'm not even trying to make 205 at this point. So can he continue to make 170 and where he looks great? He looks phenomenal. And those big 185ers that are coming down from 205 can't grapple fuck him. Or is he going to go back to 185 where that will probably always be the end game? Are those big 185ers are just going to grind him out? So we'll see. Interested in seeing what happens with him next. Let's get to the second fight. I believe it was Tony versus
Tony Ferg.
Jesse, you and I both picked against Tony Ferg here. So, you know, rather than sit here and dance on the man's grave, which I'm sure we'll do a little bit of, it seemed to me like a pretty simple where we were right, where we were wrong. It seemed like a pretty easy pick. Tony's definitely trending down. We discussed all the losses in a row versus the great competitors. We discussed last week also just how stylistically this was a bad matchup for him. And it was. You can tell in the cage, it was a bad matchup for him. I believe the submission finish was a fucking plus 900. So if you took that, fucking congratulations. But Jesse, give me some thoughts on this fight.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you take a look at Tony's run in his, you know, in his prime, when he was prime Tony Ferguson, a guy like Bobby Green, he would have pretty soundly defeated Bobby Green. Bobby Green's no slouch. I'm not trying to, you know, say that he's like much lesser competition, but prime Tony Ferguson would have finished Bobby Green. At this point in time, you have Bobby Green, who I don't even want to call it an uptick for Bobby. I just, he's healthy. He's obviously eating well now. Like, his diet and his training is on point. He's doing what he can to stick around and make some more money. And a fight against a former champion like Tony Ferguson is a great matchup for a guy, you know, in his predicament, you know, where he stands with his career and everything. And I just think that watching these two fight, and here's the other thing is, Bobby Green didn't just soundly win this fight. He did take damage. Ferguson
he got dropped in the first round.
He got dropped. It wasn't necessarily a walkthrough for Bobby Green. And again, I like to try to keep things on a realistic plate here. Bobby Green did not walk through Tony Ferguson. And this is probably the worst version of Tony Ferguson that we've ever seen. So to sit here and think that Bobby Green has aspirations of, you know, title contention and stuff, I think is almost ridiculous to talk about. But a great matchup for Bobby and to put under his belt. He can sit in there and say, hey, man, I've now beaten a former world champion. So as far as Tony Ferguson is concerned, I don't necessarily want to sit here and be the guy, because you and I do that. I do it more than you, but I typically will definitely stamp a guy out and be like, it's time to hit the bricks, you know, brother. Like, you know, your health and everything should be way more of a concern as of right now than fighting is. But I'm going to do that with Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson's L's are bad. I mean, you're talking about knockouts, vicious fights, long drug out battles. I mean, Tony's been in the mud for a while, and he did get beat up. Bobby took punches for sure. He took damage, but Tony Ferguson looked like, you know, he got chopped up through a meat grinder himself. He did not look good. All that scar tissue and everything, all of it was opened up. He looked like a mess. And I know that he was sitting at post conference and he was talking about, no, I'm not going to talk about the end of my career. I'm going to talk about my next fight. But if I'm Tony's people, I'm in his ear. And I'm trying to weigh out options. That I'm not like, I, if I'm his people, I'm saying, hey, Tony, we need to sit down and talk about this.
We don't like telling fighters when it's time to hang it up. It's really not our job. It's their family's job. It's their trainer's job. It's the people whose opinions they respect's job. Right. But from an observational standpoint, it's everything that you're saying, Jess. Plus, in no universe, in both of their primes, does Bobby Green submit Tony Ferguson? And
no,
I think fighters should always try and look for that. And fighters know this was the moment where I realized this was it. I can't fight at the highest level anymore. But then it's more than I can't compete at the highest level. I still am a prize fighter and I want to get paid. So I got to find fights. But now we're getting into these spots where, you know, we laugh at Mayweather fighting at 50 or whatever he is, but he's not getting hurt in these fights. You know, he's boxing for 6 or 8 or 10 rounds and he's collecting big checks and getting the fuck out. That Tony's getting, as you said, beat up really bad, taking an accumulation of abuse through 3, 4, 5 rounds multiple times. Now he's getting knocked out. Now he is getting choked unconsciously because he's got too much pride to tap out. To me, that's worrisome as fuck. And I know he's got kids. I don't know if he's married or not, but I think at that point you got to sit down with your family and go, what are we doing? You know, when we were talking, shout out to our boy, Smash Squad MMA, when we were tweeting about Tony and where he's at in his career, are we really going to have Tony on prelims? Is he really going to swallow his pride and go, nah, I'm good opening up the last fight on ESPN? Is he really good fighting the 3rd or 4th spot in the Apex? Because that's where they did to fucking BJ. Like, that's where we're at. And I hate to see it. And we say it all the time on this show, right? Father time, never lost. And at some point, you got to go, all right, this is where I'm at. There's no reason to go to another organization and fight Bellator. There's no reason for you to go fight bare knuckle. There's no reason for you to go to Japan because your career is where it's at. It's been defined. You'll always be one of the greats. Let's not continuously tarnish that legacy where now people are looking at you again like they do BJ, or they did, I'll even say someone like Muhammad Ali, you know, not comparing him to that type of great. Like, people always look at those last 2, 3 fights of your career and go, yeah, but look. And there are less than a handful of fighters that can say I was able to walk away from that. You know, I was even thinking about De La Hoya because I know he's been in the news a lot. I know he's got that documentary that's on HBO that I haven't been able to watch yet. But he wasn't a guy. He's a guy that made hundreds of millions of dollars, and he even had to be stopped on the stool and someone tell him that this is it. We can't let you continue to do this anymore. Like, you're not it anymore. This is it.
And yeah, my boy Shogun. Anybody who's followed me or on any social media that I've had in the past or Twitter now or know me, they know that Shogun Hua is my boy. Been my boy for years and years and years. My favorite fighter of all time. And I believe his last fight, which was a loss, I believe it was on a prelim fight in Brazil.
These guys used to fight incredibly the Saitama Arena, 100,000 people. You know what I mean? These guys were fucking main eventing 90,000 seat arenas in Japan. And now here you are. It's, you know what I mean? Combat sports is a mother. We're repetitive on the show. We say it every week. And this is kind of that instance, if you will, this is a perfect instance. And I just hope the best for Tony. And no one wants to see their favorite fighters go out like that. But unfortunately, that's really how combat sports is and how it ends. Again, for a majority of your fighters, whether they're your favorites or not, it's just the cruelness of the sport. And we always finish, Jess. We always like to put the cherry on top and say this. We hope that Tony can do something outside of the sport. Maybe he wants to coach. Maybe he wants to corner fighters. Maybe he wants to train fighters. There's other avenues to make money. There's other ways to cash in on your name. You don't have to continuously fight. You don't.
Yeah. It's true. Combat sports is sports in general. Sports in general is like an ex-wife. It loved you for a minute, but then it's taking all your cash later. So,
Jess, you gotta be careful.
I
don't want to start bouncing from topic to topic here, but when you and I were texting last night about running backs and the state of the running backs in the NFL, this is a perfect comparison where it doesn't matter how great that dude was. Where's he at in his career now? And we're seeing that with Ezekiel Elliott. We're seeing that now with Dalvin Cook, and he ain't even, and we're still trying to figure out if we've seen all of his greatness yet. And he can't get a fucking, he can't get a lineup. Like, it's just the NFL, when it comes to specific positions, running backs being one of them now, they've said, listen, we will fucking churn you out. Your first payout's gonna, your rookie contract's probably gonna be one of, if not your best contract. We're not giving you that second year deal because we're hoping to have ran you out by year four. We're hoping that we've gotten 200 touches out of you every year for the past 4 years. If we have, that means you've been productive as fuck. Go find that money somewhere else.
Yeah.
All right, Jess, let's jump into the third fight. As we were doing the preview show last week, we did two things. One, we talked about how great Wonder Boy versus Pereira was going to be. Was it Pereira? Am I saying the wrong Pereira? Is it Pereira? I could be saying that wrong.
No, I believe he's a Pereira as well. Yeah,
as well, a lot of Pereiras. Yeah. So we were fired up for this fight. We were fired up for Wonder Boy. This was one of those. This is what makes this card this great. We also kind of shit on Derek Lewis, which is something we've been doing on this show for a while. Here's my second guy I was talking about, by the way, the redemption story thing. From earlier, and he's really reached a point in his career where he, in my opinion, is just, it's, I don't even want to say below a curtain jerker, but he's just really like, he's a filler. He's a fight filler. If anything else, they need a guy. They know he'll be here. They've done it with so many heavyweights throughout the year. They're still doing it with Arlovski. They did it with Overeem. They just do it with heavyweights. They find ways to stick them in the meat grinder. And it felt like this was it for Derek Lewis. He's curtain jerking. In my mind, I'm thinking, I'm not even going to watch him fight. So who cares? I'll be watching AEW Collision between 5 and 7. the day before, I believe the Friday was when Pereira was out. And I still don't understand the whole equation there, because I believe, and help me out if you know this, Jess, or we're just going to sound like two dummies here. If you weigh in over, and let's say it's like 2 pounds or 3 pounds, I believe it's the discretion of your opponent. I believe it's their decision. If they say, yeah, I'm still willing to take the fight, even though you're 3 pounds over, but I'm also getting 20% of your purse, and I'm also getting whatever else I can shake out of Dana. Is that accurate? Does that sound right? Or am I in the ballpark?
No, that's accurate. So if you come in, you miss weight, and you can't make weight, they give you like an hour or something. They give you an hour or whatever to try to cut back that weight that you're over. If you can't make that second attempt, then it's up to your opponent's discretion if they want to continue with the fight, except the fight will then be considered a catch weight, even though you've made weight, and the person who missed weight gives up 20% of the purse.
To their opponent.
To the opponent, yeah.
So, is this a scenario where Wonder Boy turns that down? Where he says, no, actually, I'm not doing that. He has that right as well, right?
Of course. The opponent who made weight does not have to accept the fight at that point in time. Where Dana has pulled the trigger even and said, no, this fight's not happening. It doesn't happen as often. But what happened Friday night, I think, is unprecedented as far as I don't ever remember a fighter saying, you know, having a team come back and be, hey, man, my guy can't make weight. He still wants to fight. We're going to give up 20% of the purse. You're going to get it. What do you want to do? And usually the fighter says yes, because, again, earlier, they're prize fighters. They fight for money.
Yeah, they train for 3 months and all this other shit.
So when they come back to the boys' team and they say, hey, you know, Michael's, he can't make weight. He cut that 3 pounds. He still wants to fight this fight. We think it's going to be a good fight. What do you want to do? We'll give up 20% of the purse. And then Stephen Thompson says, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to fight. We're done.
I'm out.
And his explanation was, hey, look, man, I'm like a 40-year-old dude who still has a little bit of time left to try to reach my goal of winning a championship in the UFC. I'm on a win streak right now. if I take this fight with a dude who already is coming in heavier than me and I lose, there goes all my aspirations out the window. Yep. And I most likely will not get another shot at my age. So he was taking a very calculated risk. I don't know how Dana felt about it. Cause I mean, let's be real, man, Dana White can feel one way or the other about this. I don't know. I've not heard anything about Dana's views on this.
I heard that Dana didn't pay him a show purse. So I think that Dana definitely felt a certain way. I think Dana definitely felt a certain way.
So again, you know, you take that risk by not taking the fight. I get it. Like, his explanation makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. It absolutely makes sense. From his perspective, he's on a streak. He's still in that top, you know, 5-7, you know, or whatever in that division. He's still thinking, hey, man, if I win my next fight or two, I will most likely be in a title contention situation.
That's fair.
But if I take this fight against – and Michael Pereira is no slouch. He's a very dangerous fighter.
Dangerous fight even if they were at even weights.
100% accurate. Dangerous fight regardless. It was going to be a banger fight. And Stephen Thompson has been known to get knocked out, so – Stephen Wonderboy Thompson basically taking that risk, saying, I'm not going to take this fight because if I lose to a guy who didn't even make weight, now I look even worse, and there's definitely no chance I'm getting a title shot ever.
So thank you for that, Jess, because I was missing that piece of the puzzle. I knew everything up to Wonderboy turned this fight down because of this reasoning, and I had assumed that, but I wasn't sure. So thanks. That makes all the sense in the world to me. And in my opinion, I think Wonderboy did the right thing for all those reasonings. This is more than likely his last little window here, if you will. It's just about closed, and if he's gonna get it, he's got to get it now. So that makes sense. So this happens, Jess. And now all of a sudden, as I'm reading these tweets, the first thing that pops in my head is, son of a bitch, they're going to move Buck Beast up to the main event, co-main event. He's going to fucking get onto this pay-per-view. Like, fuck. And sure enough, the next day, what do I see? Oh, guess who's fighting on the fucking main card? The Black Beast.
Black Beast.
I'm thinking, fucking, here we go. What are we going to get out of this guy? And he blew my socks off. Let me tell you. What can be said about this performance that already hasn't been said? I mean, this was, without a doubt, his best performance ever. This was his Ngannou knocking out Overeem moment. This was it. I know he's got a shitload of knockouts. I know he's got a lot of moments, if you will. But this is it, in my opinion. Pretty self-explanatory here, Jess, right? Bell rings. He throws a flying knee. Derek Lewis lands it pretty much right on the chin. My man falls over. Derek hits him with a few big punches, and they stop the fight. I think it was 10 seconds long, maybe 15. Give me some thoughts on this, Jess.
Yeah, so first thing is obviously physically, Derek Lewis looked better in this for this fight than he has in any fight that we've ever seen him.
Six-pack Derek Lewis.
Yeah, he had a little bit of six-pack going on. He's looking really good. I know that he was a hungry motherfucker because, you know, you don't get a six-pack by eating food. Derek Lewis likes his food. He came in great. He looked like he trained. I think that I don't know where the flying knee came from. That was a wrinkle in that, you know, little situation there. Yeah. I'd never seen a flying knee from a guy that big, and especially for Derek Lewis and whatnot. Derek Lewis comes in, he throws the flying knee. Rogério Lima, he gets hit, he falls over, they tussle for a minute, and then Derek Lewis lands some of his famous really hard punches from top mount, basically, and they finished the fight. I think you're right. It was only like 17 seconds or something like that. Maybe it got 17, 20 seconds long. It was pretty quick. I was taken back, and I gotta eat crow on this one, man, because I thought Derek Lewis was getting subbed out. On this, Derek Lewis, my friend, you look great. You look really good, and it was a huge win. It was a coup de grace, so to speak, for Mr. Black Beast. I want to relate Derek Lewis's career. I'm going to throw in a little professional wrestling reference to Road Dogg James.
Oh wow.
He's good enough to stick around and be on some main cards fights, but he's not good enough to he's not gonna get to the apex and win, you know, the World Heavyweight Championship like a Triple H or something. And so Derek Lewis to me is the Road Dogg Jesse James of the UFC.
It's like a big bill in AEW almost. I just wanted to get a big bill reference in there. So thank you for
big
that.
Big Bill's a good reference. That's a good reference too.
He did the, do you think there's any chance that the UFC does not re-sign
him? You know what? I didn't even make that reference considering that he did the DX chop at the end. I didn't even.
That's good too. I didn't even think of that. God,
I didn't even think about that. Look at that. Boom.
You're fucking carrying me today. You're LeBron. Let me get out of your way here. It's 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Ball's yours. I'll be in the corner. So, any chance that he does not re-sign with the UFC?
Oh, no, no, no. The UFC, so again, like, being where he is, Dana White knows that he's a popular fighter. People like him. They seem to go to Houston a lot, or in the, you know, San Antonio, mm-hmm. you know, in that Texas area. So, they like
that
Texas.
Tri-state area?
That tri-state area there. So, I think that he will get probably, I'm guessing probably like a 5-fight contract from Dana.
God, five.
I think it'll be a 5-fight contract. I think the Black Beast is going to, you know, when his career is done, however it ends, it will be with the UFC.
I love the idea of going, let's roll you out a 3-fight deal. And if you can win all three of these fights, you're getting a title fight. Because those are the, you need 3 fights, beat someone in the top 10, beat someone in the top 5, beat the number one contender, and now all of a sudden you're back in the title mix. I've been saying it for a few weeks now. They're trying to build new stars. And some of these.
Can Derek Lewis come into fight shape like that every single fight for those 3 fights?
6-pack Derek Lewis might be the new motivated BJ. So let's see. Another, I got 2 BJ references in the show. So I feel like I've done my job. No holds barred. NHB, Don Fry, fans of the show. I was able to cram them in. I'm just cramming it all in.
We're going to talk NHB for your main event when we get up there. So
I can't wait. Okay. So, Jess, this is where, once again, you are LeBron and I am Dwayne Wade. I'm Chris Bosch in the corner, just letting you take over. So, in real time, I'm looking at my phone and I'm realizing that Crawford and Spence are making their way into the ring. And I'm like, they're really going to do this fucking fight dead during the UFC co-main event and main event. This is fucking brutal. You are really making combat sports fans do the old Sophie's Choice, if you will. And this goes back to what I was talking about last week. If you paid for one and you know the other fight's starting, fuck are you doing? Are you looking at it on your phone? Do you have 2 TVs? What are you doing? So I did not watch any of Jan versus Alex Pereira. I have tried to find it via online and I have failed. So this is where Jesse, who watched the fight, is going to walk us through what has happened. I heard the first round was Jan. I heard the last 2 rounds went Alex's way. I heard they were very, very mid, possibly below mid. Give me a report here.
Yeah. So for as hyped as everybody has been, and I'm fight as an example for why I think that Jan is the most mid champion that I've ever witnessed in the UFC. Wow. I honestly don't see the hype behind this guy. Like, he has so many fans. I don't even know where they come from. Maybe they're just like, oh, that guy's a champion. And he kind of looks like Stipe. So I'm going to root for that guy. Like, I don't know, man. Jan, to me, doesn't do anything amazing. He doesn't do anything. He's not great at anything. He's good at a few things and striking. Yeah, he's got hands. He's got some power behind those hands. But most of anything else, I've never seen him really do anything fantastic. And that's why I picked Alex Pereira in this fight. Is his kickboxing record just by itself is so amazing. His skill set is so amazing. He's come up in to, you're thinking that even if he loses a little bit of that speed, it's going to be replaced by more. The guy's already a giant when he's just walking around at like 230. Like, holy shit, right? So I'm thinking this fight, this division, it's made for Alex. He's going to come in here and he's going to teach Jan a lesson about striking. Instead, little pity pat back and forth, throw a kick, get a kick, throw a punch, get a punch. Like, but neither man really took a lot of damage. Wasn't a lot of like big shots thrown. There definitely wasn't a lot of big shots taken. And then what we get at the end of this contest is a split decision win for Alex Pereira. So this is where my big thing comes in. Pereira has had all of these battles with Izzy, right? And people are like putting stool after only having like 6 or 7 MMA fights, and now he's fighting Jan, who is a former champion and out a bigger guy, and you're giving Alex the chance to move up where he might be a little bit more comfortable in that weight class, but he was not spectacular at all. And now you could cough this up and just say, hey, you know what, styles make fights, both these guys mm-hmm. are strikers, they kind of negated each other a little bit yeah. on set.
I was worried about that.
Or you could just and I think that unbiasedly I would lean that way. I think both guys' styles kind of each other, and so they just there was a lot of like, you know, like I said, like a kick, the other guy would throw a kick, guy throw a punch, the other guy throw a punch, and there just wasn't a lot of action. There wasn't a lot of big things that happened in the fight, so they just kind of crossed each other out all three rounds, and so you get this. Like squeaks out a win. I don't think it does. It doesn't hurt either of these men's career. Like both these, this, you know, the loss for Jan, it doesn't hurt him. The win for Alex, I don't think makes it better. Like most people would think, yeah, a win over Jan is a big deal. I don't think that it's really going to do a lot for Alex. And honestly, if I was Dana, I would try my best to roll that fight back.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
So I wonder again, not watching it, not having much eyes on it other than the few moment clips I've saw on the internet. I'm guessing here that Alex was a little bit tentative because this is his first fight at 205 and he doesn't know what Jan's power is. He knows he's got knockout power. So he might and he knows he's just coming off of a fight where he was knocked out. So maybe he's a little gun shy, a little tentative, a little less to take those big chances and extend those big strikes. Worried that Jan's going to hit him with a good counter punch, counter kick, counter knee. What I did hear was I heard Jan got some takedowns or fought for takedowns in the second and third round. If he was able to get takedowns, he wasn't able to do much with them. There was really no advancement in it.
He wasn't able to hold Alex down for very long either.
Very, very stagnant. And so should we be rewarding Alex for getting up? Should we be rewarding Jan for not doing anything with those takedowns? I don't know. That's tough. I didn't watch a fight again, so it's impossible for me to say I feel firm here, I feel firm there. I'd like for him to run it back just so I could see what would happen in a 5-round fight. But Jan is in that unique scenario where he can a loss in this position doesn't necessarily hurt him. He's still going to be ranked in that top 3 to 5. He's still going to have access to maybe a streamlined championship fight if it's there. And if anything, Alex is going to be able to say, all right, I tested the waters now. I'm a little bit more confident. I didn't get knocked out in this fight, so I got a little bit more back in me with regards to, again, my confidence. But again, I'm not sure where they go with these dudes. You said run it back. I'm not sure what they do. I'm sure they wanted Alex to fight Jiří when Jiří's healthy. I'm sure they want that. I'm sure they want a permission. I think either of those fights would be great, whether it was Jan versus Jiří or Jiří versus Alex. I think any of those fights are exciting. So,
I think after watching that fight, Jiří mops them both.
Really?
Yeah.
If
those two guys fight Jiří like they fought each other, Jiří mops them.
Jiří's a mother, opinion. Too. Yuri's a mother, so that wouldn't surprise me. And I mean,
Yuri's a shocker. I did not expect this type of career from him.
But the story is there if you're doing. I'm pretty sure Glover trains Alex, right?
Yeah.
So the story is already written there with, you know, you're taking Glover's protege and he's fighting the guy that beat him.
End of his career.
Yeah. So there's some heat there, if you will. Got a little bit of heat, brother.
Ooh, I like that. Little storyline going.
Let's go to the main event here, Jess. The BMF belt. Very unique here in what happened. I do have some takes, so I want to start with yours. I believe we both picked Poirier here, and I believe we both were on the side of this is one of those fights that can go either way. We can see a scenario where Justin can land something that completely changes the fight, and that's what happened. Give me some thoughts here.
Yeah, so the way that we basically described it is I think both were on the same page as far as Poirier's game plan in their first fight. If he just follows that through, he's either going to get another TKO win or he's going to be able to at least get a unanimous decision win over Gaethje. Poirier came in and literally did implement that same basic guidelines had come into the first fight. Mm-hmm. You know, crisp striking, a few kicks here and there, like
the counter striking.
Really shooting for takedowns.
Counter striking.
Yeah, a lot of counter striking. Poirier likes to get in deep with those body shots. Gaethje's been hurt by body shots before, so you've seen a few of those shots thrown. But Gaethje did the thing that we didn't expect. We said that Gaethje is going to go in there, he's going to headhunt, he's going to, you know, look for takedowns. And the way that he finishes this fight is by, he basically just threw up a really, like, it would, and don't get me wrong, like, I've watched Mirko Krokop throw leg kicks, so I know what a good high leg kick looks like. That was an ugly high kick. That was ugly, man. Like, it looked like Gaethje was going to fall over after he threw it, man. Like,
but that's
he'd already
how he
thrown
throws
one earlier.
Yeah, it looks ugly like that, Jess, because he is projecting all of the fucking power in his body into that kick. Like, he's throwing all of his hips, all of his body into that kick. It's like a true super kick, if you will.
Like, no technique in that kick. Like, he just threw, like you said, he threw his whole entire body. Like, his whole body turned with the kick. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, it's just the hips. You have that, like, hip, you know, flex. And Gaethje's whole body moved with that kick, and just it was flush. It held. Poirier even had his hand up, and it still rocked.
Still got through.
So that goes to show how heavy of a kick that was, and how hard it was thrown. He had thrown one in the first, like a little. I think he threw a left kick that was again pretty ugly looking, and Poirier avoided it, blocked it, and then but that kick that came, I believe it was from the right side, and Poirier, the thing is Poirier, again, he had his hand up to block, and it just absorbed everything straight through that glove and still knocked Poirier, you know, senseless. So to me, that first round was, again, very fun. Like we thought, we both figured that the fight would be a fun fight, and it really was. A lot of admiration and respect shown between both men, and the kind of admiration where they, before they fight, they're super cool with each other, and when they fight, they're throwing everything at each other. I love those kind of fights, and that's how the first round was. It was very calculated, violent first round. And then that second round, it was short because that kick came, I think, it like within the first minute or two of the second round. So the second round ended very quickly. Big win for Gaethje. And at this point in time, I don't want to say that Poirier, like, I think Poirier is happy with his career. I think he even talked about it a little bit, like, hey, mm-hmm. you know what? Like, I'm still here doing my thing. I'm still making money. I'm still providing for my family, right? So Poirier, he's not feeling terrible about the loss. I don't think the UFC feels terrible about the loss. Poirier, you know, will continue fighting big fights. And as far as Gaethje, I think this opens up a door and, you know, for him to potentially be one of the next couple guys in line for that title fight. I think that I would like to see it happen. If Gaethje would like to fight Connor, steroid McConnor, yep. You know, that's fine.
You went. Hey, listen, I'm so glad you went there because I am going to open that can.
If he wants to fight steroid McConnor, that's fine. But that fight would be exciting, and I think that it stylistically is where Conor McGregor is in his career and Justin Gaethje is in his. It would be again a very fun fight. I think that I would probably lean Gaethje in that fight. If Poirier wants to fight Conor, that's cool too. Like either one of those, like we can run that back again if we want to. But I would like to see Gaethje not take an expended fight for no real reason. I would like to see him take a fight that means a step closer to a title fight.
So I thought Poirier won the first round. Let me start there. One thing to me that really kind of blew my mind was I think Poirier wins the first round and Gaethje goes back to his corner and he's got the Greg Jackson disciple trainer there. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And he says, yeah, that was fucking beautiful. And I'm thinking it was? Like, he was in touch in that round. I don't think he didn't win that round, dude. What do you mean? But, Gaethje has controlled chaos. And at his best, he is always going to have a fucking puncher's chance, a kicker's chance. His strikes are just so significant. They really are. We talk about significant strikes in fights. I mean, the guy might have the most significant. I always think about his fight. It was either against Chandler. I think it was against Chandler, where he threw a fucking punch so hard his whole body spun. He missed it, but he just fell on his ass.
He did that against Poirier in their first fight.
He just punches so fucking hard. He missed it. It's like when you see somebody strike out on a fastball pitch and their whole body spins, like almost like when you'd watch it on a Walt Disney cartoon and you'd watch Goofy fucking spin around and the bat spin around him like a snake. That's like the torque in his body when he's throwing these strikes. He landed, and that was really the difference. This may be Hagler Hearns of combat sports. This may be the Moreno Figgy, where these guys are just going to beat the shit out of each other every time you fight. It's almost like a coin toss. Who is going to land their big strike first? Almost a completely different fight from the first fight, because the first fight was an accumulation of an ass whooping that ended up finishing Gaethje, in my opinion. I don't know. So first of all, with Poirier. You think Poirier made about $6 million to $10 million on those two Conor fights?
It's a Conor fight. I would say low ball $3 million, high ball $6
on the two fights. So
yeah.
So combined, he probably made $6
million. Somewhere around $6
million. So say maybe high, maybe 8 to 10.
Yeah, we can say that.
He probably doesn't need to fight. He's made his money. He's made very good money. He's made retirement money. So I'm not sure where Dustin's at with the, I guess you would say, the blueprint of his career. Like, is he going to continue to chase titles? Or at this point, do you go, I've got like 40 fights. It's time for me to just do super fights and that's it. I'm not sure. The Justin one to me is the most intriguing because does he wait for a title fight? Does he wait to see what happens with whoever the number one contender versus champion is, or does he take the Conor fight? Because it's there, right? It's clearly there. Now, after the fight, it seemed to me like he was evasive about it because they were like, hey, Conor's tweeting about you. And he's like, yeah, I don't, whatever. He said something very honorable to me because it was like, yeah, I want to fight for belts. I'm fighting for belts now. I've done this. I've done that. I want to fight for belts. And that to me was like, all right, he's figured out. He's at that point in his career where he wants to fight for fucking belts. He says he wants to fight for a belt. If he wants to challenge himself against the absolute best, fucking by all means, he's earned it. But I'm always going to go to prize fighting, Jess. You know your boy. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to go to where is the largest fucking bag? Because you are putting, especially a guy like Gaethje, Dude, you've been in the UFC for 5 years now. In every fucking fight, you are just taking a beating, dude. You are Mick Foley in there getting dropped off of a fucking Hell in a Cell every time you fight, brother. How about you just get a big ass bag? And what I would honestly think is easy work for him. I don't think Conor can stand and bang with him, and I don't think Conor's going to knock him out. I don't know where fucking Conor's power is anymore. I haven't seen him fighting forever. So I think that, dude, if I'm Justin's people, I'm like, bro, this is easy money. If he can even make the fight, because like you said, allegedly, he may be on some things, and he might be having problems getting into the USADA pool to get a fight. I don't know what the workarounds or you know, hey now reach arounds are on that, but it sounds like he might have some type of loophole that he's willing to drive a truck through to get a fight made, and I'm sure Dana will be the one steering that truck. But I'm not sure what he does next. But if I'm advising him, I think his trainer's name is Travis, right? Can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. But if I'm his trainer, I'm going, dude, that is an easy money fight for you. You are winning that fight, I believe, 7 or 8 out of 10 times if you fight. And you go, you take that fight, you knock Conor out 1 or 2 rounds, and then you come around and get that championship fight. Because win or lose that championship fight, you're $3-5 million richer. So what are we fucking doing here?
No, it makes sense. And we here on That Other Sports Show are all about athletes getting the bag. And obviously, if he wants the bag, he will, you know, maybe there could even be a deal made. Like him and Trevor Whitman, by the way, is Trevor Whitman.
There it is.
Him and Trevor That's Whitman Travis, go to Dana and they say, Dana, we want to put together the Conor McGregor fight. And then, of course, Dana's eyes are going to light up. He's going to be like, I'm so glad you guys are on board with this.
Dana's going to come out of the Scrooge McDuck safe of coins and gold and valuables and go, oh, I guess I'm going to dive right back in here because you guys are going to put more money in here. Cool.
And if I'm his team, I'm saying, Dana, I know that Justin's like top three right now or whatever, somewhere in that range of lightweights. We go, we take this McGregor fight. Gaethje wins. We get an immediate title fight. That would be my stipulation. Because if you happen to lose to Conor, you just take your lumps. You still stay somewhere in that top five range. And, you know, everybody talks about how Conor McGregor is this great fighter, this and that. And then, you know, you're still Justin Gaethje, the knockout guy. But if you beat Conor, why would you take another fight and risk a title fight on another fight? I would put a stipulation and say, Dana, we'll take the Conor fight. We think that we're going to win. And because we're so confident in that, we want an immediate title fight.
You go, Charles is going to fight Islam, probably no matter what. That's the fight that we're making. We're not going to do Islam versus Volk. We're going to do Islam versus Charles. And you get the winner of that fight. And if Conor happens to beat you, then he gets the winner of that fight.
Yeah.
And Michael Chandler, you're SOL. Sorry, pal. But that's what I would do. Who the fuck am I? Some idiot on a podcast, hour deep, talking shit. So what are you going to do? Jess, all right. I think we have completely covered the UFC. Are we missing anything? Do we have any closing thoughts, if you will?
No, we got that pretty good. There is an upcoming card, main event, Corey Sandhagen, Rob Font. I think that fight is going to be fun. The rest of that card is below mid. So
Sandhagen wins, by the way. Sandhagen decision. Rob Font is a really good fighter, but he's coming in late. So if anything, he might get knocked out. But I think that he wins. Corey wins the decision.
I agree with Sandhagen.
Three rounds to two or 4 rounds to 1.
I agree with Sandhagen win over Font.
Jesse, we have 2 fights to talk about here, and I don't know how much time you have left here, but I'm probably looking at about 15 minutes tops. Heads up. So my kids are shaking me down to give them a ride. Let's start with Crawford Spence. I absolutely love this fight. I went into it drinking the Kool-Aid with 2 fists, and my thirst was quenched. I've been overflowing. Of quenched thirst from this fight. And I have takes, but Jess, I want to start with you because you were very nice and you went out of your way to watch this fight. Give me some thoughts.
Yeah, so I want to start off by saying I did pick Errol Spence Jr. to win this fight. I
thought a lot of people did.
I thought he was going to be a little bit crisper, a little bit. I think that he. I thought that he was going to be a little bit more, a little bit harder to hit. That did not. That was not the case.
That was not the opposite.
Matter of fact, it was quite the opposite. He got hit a lot. He got hit like a Mack truck about 125 times. Terrence Crawford, I've never watched him fight. I have watched a few fights and clips of Errol Spence Jr. I've never watched Terrence Crawford fight. So watching this fight, what I seen was how abnormally aggressive he was. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I've ever seen a boxer quite as aggressive. Like the way he threw punches, every punch thrown was technical and accurate, but with much ill intent. Like, I don't think I've seen a boxer quite fight like that. And that really caught me off guard. Like every punch he threw and landed, Spence Jr. was getting hurt every single shot. Like there wasn't like there was hardly any glancing blows. And even if there were, even those seemed to hurt Spence Jr.
Yes.
And Spence Jr. was just absolutely unable to get out of the way of anything.
No answers.
Crawford was like a hurricane. Everywhere Spence Jr. moved, Crawford moved like strategically to stay in front of him. It was insane the ring knowledge that Crawford had and control of every step Spence Jr. took. Again, Crawford was just, it was like in those, you know, Jason movies, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jason just appears, you know, you think you're gone, you think you got away, and Jason shows up, he's right behind you. Like that's Crawford. It was insane. And then again, like I said, just the punching power, the striking was so accurate and just, I can't say it enough. Like he was just so uber aggressive. Like it was crazy. Most fighters, especially strikers in either combat sports or in mixed martial arts or boxing, most strikers who are very aggressive with their striking are prone to counter strikes. But Crawford threw so hard, so much, so accurately that Spence Jr. didn't have time to counter anything. And so there was the drop in the second round, which, again, was also a glancing blow. It breezed past his head, hit him kind of the side of the head, and then Spence Jr. went down the second. And then there was another instance where there was a bit of striking in the corner, I believe, in the seventh is when Spence Jr. went down again. And then in the ninth is when they just had to stop the fight because Spence Jr. was just getting beat up. Like,
yeah.
It was, to me, the only way I can describe that fight was a mugging.
I think that's fair. We love the career-defining performances in all sports, right? But in combat sports, they're fantastic. And this was his Mayweather versus Corrales moment. This was his Trinidad versus Vargas moment, where you go, we think these guys are evenly matched. We were wrong. And he really just put a beating from pillar to post on Spence. I gave Spence the first round. I thought his jab was controlling the fight. And then I was giving Spence the second round. But at some point in the second round, you could really see the turn where Crawford was like, okay, I see what you're doing. I see you're going to throw a lot of jabs. So I'm just going to take that away. And once he took it away and he started dominating with his jab and really just pumping it out, Spence had no answers. And to piggyback off of what you said, his ability to crowd the ring and cut off the ring every time Spence tried to move, when Spence is great at moving, at the lateral movement, I mean, it was masterful. And the jab was just eating Spence up. And I know I said it a bunch of times last week, Jess, but I just kept thinking, the car wreck, the car collision. I just kept thinking, his fucking jaw, like he hasn't taken abuse like this. And I don't know if he's getting beat up like this in the gym, This is what happens when you dominate in your own gym, especially in boxing, is you're just beating up the same dudes all the time. You're beating up the same sparring partners all the time. They might be great. They might be former Olympians. They might be great in 2-3 years, but you're just beating the shit out of them. So you don't have any true competition. The layoff, there were just so many things there that just, in my opinion, factored in heavily. And, you talk about the drop. Spence got dropped in the second, and I just don't think he ever recovered. At some point in the fourth or fifth round, his face started looking really bad. He started looking just worse for wear. And at some point, he just started looking almost punch drunk. And then I don't know if he's just concussed and just going through the motions as a fighter. I think his corner didn't do him any justice either, because I think he probably could have stopped that fight before that ninth round. He gets dropped beautifully in the seventh round with a counterpunch. Bud was baiting him a little bit with the jab, trying to get him to throw power punches or overcommit a little bit. And once he did, Bud was just there in his ass. And shout out to Bud for stopping that fight when he did, because I was able to watch the main event in its entirety on the UFC side. So I appreciate that, Bud. But yeah, just a fucking overall masterful performance. And I know they were talking to Charo Bros, and he was literally beating the shit out of Spence and then going in the corner and yelling at Charo Bros while he's beating the shit out of Spence, which is just impressive on its own level. Bud's the guy. He's number one pound for pound. I know Inouye is getting thrown in that mix now because he just had a masterful performance as well that I watched. The Inouye performance to me was more of, this is the true top flight level competition. Inouye's finally really getting challenged by great American competition, and he just aced that. This to me, again, it was just a beating pillar to post, and credit to Crawford. I mean, he is a bad man. And if I'm that Charo bro, I'm in no rush to get that fight. I'm in no rush to take that fucking fight. Why? You just saw what he did. Like, he just beat the shit out of that guy.
Like, you can sit there and talk shit about it and, like, ask for the fight or talk about, like, wanting to take that fight.
Oh, yeah.
But when the dude that you're talking shit to you while he's beating the shit out of somebody in a cage during a live event, like, that's something you should really take into notice.
He's made it a point to find you in the audience. He's made it a point to find where you're fucking sitting in row 4, fucking seat B, to go, yeah, actually, you're next, dude. So heads up on that. That's fucking impressive. That's Clubber Lang in fucking Rocky 2. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? Jess, we can hit the wrap it up button on that fight, unless you got any other further thoughts.
No, it was a beautiful fight.
I believe, Jess, this is the least amount of buzz that we've had going into a Paul fight in a very long time, which is alarming to me, because he's fighting Nate Diaz, who is, some people would say, a superstar. I believe you and I are probably going to be on the same side here on the who you got, but who you got.
So I think that the buzz, I think, is because Nate Diaz is not he's not a national superstar. He's definitely not an international superstar. He's a UFC superstar. So if you're not fighting under the UFC banner, people don't really know who Nate Diaz is. I think the same can be said for a lot of UFC, you know, stars. Nate doesn't carry weight outside of that arena. You know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned. Now, as far as Diaz, he is international because of a lot of his exploits, his YouTube stuff, obviously his fights and other things that he's had happen. He's got his own promotion, everything going on. As far as this fight's concerned, I know that Nate Diaz I don't think he's ever been knocked out. I think he got a TKO loss, mm-hmm. but he's never been truly knocked out. I don't think it's going to happen now, but I am going to pick Jake Paul TKO. I'm going to say fourth round. I believe it's Is it a sixth round or an eight round?
I believe it's eight rounds.
Okay, I'm going four. I think Jake Paul, he's too big, too strong. I think Jake Paul would beat the shit out of his brother in a boxing match. So, I mean, I think Jake is a serious boxer, who probably will never reach the highest peaks of boxing because he does it more for fun or more for money, I guess, not for fun, but for money. But as far as his skill set, it's gotten much better. He has gotten a lot better. And I think that Nate is going to be overwhelmed in this fight.
I think the luster of Paul has rubbed off a little bit because of his loss against Fury. I think the chasing that we want to see him get beat has happened because now we've seen him beat. So that's gone. So I think that'll hurt the show, the overall buy rate, if you will. And I am in somewhat agreeance with what you're saying. I don't know if Nate is a star outside of the UFC. I know he's definitely a regional star because if you've ever been to any event that the Diaz brothers are in, it's a big fucking deal. I know he might have some stardom, but the star power to where people are going to go and buy this pay-per-view after just spending $70 on either or pay-per-view that was just this past weekend. I don't know. I think you're asking for a lot. I think this is going to be one of those things where, much like the bare knuckle fighting championship president, he's like, well, we had a lot of impressions online, but we also had a lot of people pirating. We were probably around 750,000 people pirating the show. So I think you're going to get that. There's going to be a large number of people that are just pirating the shit of the show with regards to who I think is going to win. I'm in the same boat as you. I don't think he's going to stop Nate or knock him out, but I think he's going to beat Nate up a lot, and those boxing gloves bust you up a lot more than those little light UFC gloves. He's going to get busted up with those boxing gloves, and I think a doctor will stop this fight sometime before the eighth round. They're going to come in and go, you've just got too many open lacerations. You've just got too much scar tissue that we can't control and your coach can't control. So I think that's where the stoppage happens, somewhere in the sixth or seventh or possibly eighth round that the doctor will stop this. But the problem with Nate in this fight too is he doesn't have enough power, and that you got to have a little bit of power to get Jake off you. You can get away with punch volume in the UFC because you're wearing smaller gloves. You can get away with it in the UFC because you're not necessarily fighting boxers who've built a chin. Jake's a little different, so he's gonna give fucking Nate a lot of fits, and I don't like the way this is gonna end.
No, I like I said, I just think that overall, Jake Paul is too big. He's gonna be too strong. His skill set, he's not like a top boxer, but he's got boxing skills. He knows how to box. He's got the basics down. And I mean, he has fought in some somewhat serious competition. And Nate is,
Furious competition. I think
yeah,
that's right.
Fury is, definite competition and good competition. And he even took, Fury, had to like really lay it on. So I think that Jake Paul's got enough boxing belt to do enough damage. I'm going to stick by my score. I think that somewhere around the fourth round, we're going to see some knockdowns, and Nate Diaz is going to lose TKO.
Let's do a bonus minute or two. You wanted to talk Jonathan Taylor, and I wanted to give you some space. So our football texts have started to emerge here. If you've got football friends, I'm sure your football texts are starting to warm up here. I know my group texts are starting to warm up. I know friends that I haven't heard from since last year's fantasy football season stopped have started to reemerge, if you will. A lot of people are talking about the running back situations here. The bulk of my text chats now and the thought process, if you will, of my friends when it comes to running backs is they're expendable and they're not getting paid. This is where it's bottomed out now, is when the Jonathan Taylor stuff came out, it was a unanimous that sucks for him. He's fucked throughout my group chat here. Because of the whole running backs not getting paid, he has no leverage. He has no leg to stand on. Jess, give me some thoughts on this.
So I had a quote from Travis Etienne, the Jacksonville Jaguars running back, and he kind of jumped into this whole running back controversy, and he said, in this day and age, as a running back, you have to evolve. He said the days of being a bruising 3-yard runner is over. He said you have to have hands. You have to be able to receive. You have to be able to run. You have to be able to take handoffs. You have to do a lot of multiple different things from the running back position. He said if not, that's when you will not get paid. And I think that he hit that right on the head. The days of your bruising runners, your Craig Haywards and so forth, those running back days are over. And Jonathan Taylor can receive, he can do other things, but he's a general, 15 to 18, handoffs a game type guy. And I think that the NFL has changed. The quarterback position has changed. You have quarterbacks who now run the ball 6 to 8 times a game, maybe even more. And because of that, now you're taking carries away from the running back. If you're going to be a running back, you have to be a Swiss Army tool. You know what I mean? You have to be able to do several different things. And basically what Travis Etienne was getting at is definitely he hits it on the head. You can't be that bruising running back anymore. That guy who takes a carry for 3 yards, a guy who takes a carry for 2 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards. You got to be able to do other things. Otherwise, you're going to get left out of the offense. And if you get left out of the offense, it means you also get left off the pay scale. Now, a guy like Christian McCaffrey, I find very ironic that he's jumping into this saying, well, these guys need to get paid. Well, Christian, I believe, sir, you did get the fucking bag because you are a Swiss Army fucking tool. So I don't really think that Christian McCaffrey has a whole lot of say in this controversy because he got his bag twice. And he is exactly what the NFL is looking for. That's why he is getting money still and still playing at a high level. Guy like Jonathan Taylor can do a lot of different things. And I think that the Indianapolis thing runs a lot deeper because we've seen Jim Irsay at the ends of controversy with players a lot throughout his time with the franchise. So my guess is that there's a little bit of heat between those guys somehow. And then all of a sudden you have this Jim Irsay comes out and says, hey, man, he got hurt away from the NFL practices and stuff. He got hurt. He hurt his back. He couldn't play. That's why we're contemplating redoing his contract a different way. And then you have Jonathan Taylor come back out and tweet, I never hurt my back. I never reported a back injury. I don't know who these sources are. So now we have all this controversy back and forth. So away from the running back shift and what they should or shouldn't be doing, I think more should be looked at as what's happening inside the Indianapolis Colts as a franchise.
I think the league will give a ripple effect at some point down several levels, because if I am a running back, like let's say a Derrick Henry, and I'm not going to be the guy catching a ball out of the backfield, at some point after my first year my second contract comes up, am I truly expendable? There are a handful of guys, and we talked about Zeke earlier, that are a perfect example. And I think about the running back before Zeke, Murray, who was in his absolute prime, and the Cowboys went, we don't care, we'll trade him to an in-division rival because we don't want to pay a fucking running back. And then they paid Zeke. I think the league is in this really weird and unique spot right now because at the end of the day, you still need some bruising running backs when you're in very short yardage situations. Third and short, third and two, fourth and goal. Shit like that. This is when you need a big Haas running back, and your diverse type of cat isn't going to be able to get squeeze his ass in between those two tackles. And not everyone's going to feel comfortable shoving their quarterback on those quarterback sneaks like the Eagles do 2, 3, 4, 5 times a game. Not everyone has a Hurts to be able to do that. So although I agree with you that the quarterbacks are shifting here and you're seeing more of, the mobile quarterback, a quarterback with a little bit more giddy up in his step and less of the traditional 3-step, 5-step, 7-step quarterbacks, you still need a hard-hitting type of cat to get you that yard or two. You just need it. Again, I could be wrong. Football is changing. I know offenses are really spread out. You see a lot of fourth downs these days, or running back, you know, fourth and third, fourth and two, fourth and one. You see wide receivers spread out everywhere, right? Yeah. But you know, they still got to make that catch. Like, it's just, I'm interested in seeing what happens with Josh Jacobs. I'm interested in seeing what happens with Saquon Barkley going into next year. I'm interested in seeing what truly happens with Dalvin Cook and what's going to happen going into next season, because we'll be doing dog chase tail. We'll be doing this whole thing again with Barkley next year. We'll be doing this whole thing again with Jacobs next year. And then the other running backs whose turn it is to do this shit, we'll be doing the same thing. And the ripple effect I talk about here as well, Jess, to circle back around to that, is if I am a college running back, I am thinking, how do I convert to – I'm big. How do I convert to tight end? I'm smaller. How do I convert to wide receiver? Because the running backs ain't doing it no more. But I look at what Devontae got paid. I look at what Diggs got paid. I look at what these other receivers are – Hill got paid. And I'm going, all right, it's time to change the position. It's time for me to move over. And then that ripple effect goes down to the high school level, where kids are going, I've been a running back, you know, since peewee football, but I'm seeing in the pros, my style of football don't work. My bruising running style don't work. It works in high school, works in middle school, works in peewee, but don't work at the next levels. Or does it work to where I'm getting paid and having a long career, 8, 9, 10 years in the league? Here's how I switch it. I think we're in a weird influx here, Jess, and I'm interested in seeing how it turns out.
In the NFL, there's only a few positions from the history of the NFL that have ever consistently gotten paid. You're talking about your quarterbacks, you're talking about your left tackles, you're talking about possibly your middle linebackers, who's usually the captains of the defense. Defensive ends get paid on a fairly more regular basis. Cornerbacks typically don't get paid unless you are just a megastar corner. Tight ends don't necessarily get paid unless you're a megastar tight end. But like I said, there's certain positions that will always get paid the bag. And if you're a running back and you look back in the history, the annals of history, you have to admit, like, running backs, they don't have a long career. They take more abuse than most other positions on the offense. And so it shortens that lifespan that you have in the NFL. And so, therefore, that's why teams are so hesitant to give out more than two contracts to a running back. You can always go draft a kid who's 21 years old, and he's faster, more mobile. Maybe he can catch better. And then if you plug him behind a really good, solid offensive line, that kid's also going to go out there and rush for anywhere from 800 to 1,100 yards a season. So it's tough
every,
to be running back.
I would not be surprised if in 2 to 4 years – majority of teams, I'm talking 26 out of 32, are doing the New England Patriots running back motto, which is you play 3-4 games and then we never see you again. You play 8, 10, 12 games and we never see you again. We got 3 running backs here. They're interchangeable and they're all going to be gone next year. We'll ship them to fucking Cincinnati next year.
Buffalo Bills, even. I think that we just went out in the offseason. We've signed like 3 or 4 running backs. I mean, we have James Cook, you know, Damien Harris from the New England Patriots, and I think we have 2 other running backs, and they're all being planned on being used. Again, running backs can be used with multiple multiple skill sets. Like you said, if you have that running back who's a big bruiser, who can get that 2 yards, that's when you use that guy. And then you bring in your guy who's more of a receiving guy, like a Travis Etienne, maybe. You bring him in, let him run, you know, a couple plays. The running back position is never going to go away, but it's definitely changing, and I don't see it changing back, at least for the near future. And another thing to keep in, at least to mention, that's worthwhile mentioning, how many teams have a fullback on their team? Maybe 2, 3?
Dude, it's shifted. I'm telling you, the league has shifted. The I formation that we all grew up dominating in Madden is gone. It truly is. There is no more I formation. You see an I formation on a football field in the NFL, you're like, what in the fuck? They're running an I? Holy shit. They must need a first. They must be 3rd and short. Jess, let's hit the wrap it up button. We're gonna be talking football for the next fucking 4 months. Let me shout out Fatboy Fadeaway Sports. They really are a great supporter of our show. They're at some point gonna do some type of Avengers emerging show where we come on their show. Maybe they go on our show. We're gonna figure something out soon. We need you guys. I would love to talk some baseball here before the baseball playoffs start, but that's like a month away, so we got time. Shout out! Who else are we missing here?
We got to shout out Josh Thrash Metal, who's still banging and clanging at the gym.
The wall and out of control. His testosterone is through the roof. My man.
Ladies, watch out! Our boy is on the hunt.
Everyone in Canada getting pregnant.
Everybody. Justin Trudeau, you got competition, buddy.
You're in trouble.
Josh Thrash Metal, he's coming after you, after your girl right now. Shout out to Smash Squad MMA, always big contributor on both Twitter feeds.
We love you, buddy.
Mine, Jason's, and of course Team Toss as well. And all of our homies that, you know, I don't know what's up with Shay's been gone for a while, but Shay, we love you.
He's
Justin,
working.
We love you. Chris, all the OG Team Toss guys, we love
Brian,
you guys.
Brian, we love you, buddy.
Yes, MMA on the Reg, you got mentioned earlier, buddy, wherever you are.
We miss you.
For everybody listening, thank you for listening to today's show. Hopefully, we covered at least most of the stuff that you're interested in. If you do, please follow us on Twitter at TeamToss21. Follow Jason on Twitter at Valdez spelled backwards 559. Follow me on Twitter at JTT81. You can go and follow that other sports show on both Spotify podcasts and Apple podcasts, and probably other podcasts, but those are the most popular, of course. So go and check those out. Comment, rate us.
Don't forget Variety.
Variety Sports Network. We are always supported, happily supported by Variety Sports Network. You can follow them on Twitter at @Variety_Sports_.
Check them out on YouTube too.
Oh yes, check out Variety Sports Network on YouTube. They put up a bunch of quality content, all sorts of shows, all sorts of sports, everything sports. Man, it's going down. And don't forget, it's not Twitter, folks. You can find us doing X.
Mm-hmm.
We're out, folks. Enjoy. Peace.